Maybe my favorite Easter memory happened 10 years ago. It was the Easter of 2012. That Easter, Jenny was very pregnant with our youngest daughter, Cora. And so we knew whenever Cora was going to arrive, we were going to go to the hospital. What we didn't know was whether or not I was going to be able to preach on Sunday, whether we were going to be at church on Easter. So we're trying to figure out, like, have all these backup plans. In our congregation, there was a guy who was like an associate pastor. He was a chaplain going through ordination and preached. So we came up with the plan, and the plan was I was going to write a sermon, and I was going to send it to him, and he was going to read it on Easter morning in case we were at the hospital. So the day before, I had a hard time that week. I remember the day before, I sent this guy, his name is Kevin, an email. And the email said this: "Here you go, Kevin." It had the sermon attached. "It's still pretty rough, but it's what I have. I'm thankful for the message of the cross. I stink, but God loves me anyway." Okay, so that's probably really bad theology. I don't think that's the message of the cross exactly, but that's probably what I said 10 years ago. I'm telling you this story because I loved Kevin's response to my email. He said this: "You rock, dude. Glad we can stink it up together and be loved anyway." And that Easter morning, I can't even remember the sermon. I can't. I don't remember how good or how bad it was. But what I remember about that Easter is, again, it's kind of nice to have no clue how well I performed, because that day was overshadowed so much by a few days later when our youngest daughter, Cora Salome Miller, entered the world. And that's what I really remember with 2012. And that's what makes it the best one ever. So she was born, and today I think it's maybe a bad omen or maybe an indication that there may be some stinking up again today, because it's about her 10th birthday. And so we're getting excited, but she came down, and right before I left, she looked at what I had on and she said, "Dad, are you going to wear that to church?" And I said, "Yeah." She's like, "On Easter, people usually dress nicer." So maybe I've already started stinking it up by my choice of clothes today, but today I'm kind of comforted. So whether it's bad or good or whatever, we're going to look at somebody who really did stink it up on the first Easter. His name was Peter. And we're kind of going back that Holy Week. Thursday night, Jesus had the Passover meal. He celebrated that very sacred feast with his closest companions, his disciples. He washed their feet. He started communion there. He said that the bread and the cup was about him. And then they left for a place called the Mount of Olives, which was a hill outside of Jerusalem, for some quiet time, because it was going to be the last night of Jesus' life, and he was stressed out. So he asked them to pray, and then he took three others, and they went to this garden called Gethsemane, presumably a quiet place, and he asked Peter, James, and John to stay at a place in the garden and wait and keep watch, and while he went away to pray. So Jesus did that. And we know Jesus was anxious. It said that his sweat was like drops of blood on the ground. And he was in anguish. And he prayed, asking God the Father to take the cup from him. He didn't want to have to go through the cross and all that, but he was willing. So after one time Jesus prayed, he came back. And this is what it says in Mark 14, 28 through 31. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped something. This is what Jesus told. We're going to back up a little bit. Jesus told his disciples that they were going to abandon him, and Peter insisted he would not. So we're going to go to Mark 14, 28 through 31. Peter declared, "Even if all fall away, I will not. Truly I tell you," Jesus answered, "today, yes, tonight, before the rooster crows twice, you yourself will disown me three times." But Peter insisted emphatically, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And all the others said the same. So fast forward Again, Jesus took his disciples to the Garden of the Mount of Olives, took the three, including Peter, into the Garden of Gethsemane. And we're looking at what Mark says, and there's a reason why we're in Mark today. And the reason is because there's a strong tradition that says that Mark was written by John Mark, who was a close acquaintance, a close friend of Peter's. We know that John Mark was present, or his mom at least, when Peter escaped from jail after the resurrection. So there was this closeness, and we know that John Mark was with Peter well after the resurrection. They spent time together in ministry traveling. And the tradition is that John Mark is the one who wrote Peter's account of the gospel. The thinking is that Mark was the first gospel written, and that Matthew and Luke kind of used Mark and followed suit, but that it was really essentially Peter's story that Mark was writing it down. So thinking of that, that this is probably Peter's account, that he's communicating to Mark, and then Mark is telling us what Peter said about that. So now we're going to go to Mark 14, 37, 38. This is where Jesus has prayed and he's returned. And it says, "Then Jesus returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. Simon," he said to Peter, "are you asleep? Couldn't you keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." So this happened two more times. Jesus went off to pray, and he returned, and Peter and the others were asleep. And after that third time, right after that, the disciple Judas Iscariot, famous as the betrayer, showed up with a whole mob of people there to arrest Jesus. So, and that takes us to Mark 14, 47. Peter, again, who was right there, tells us this is what happens. "Then one of those standing near drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear." Now, who was the swordsman right here? What does it say? What does Mark tell us? What does Peter tell us? Who is the swordsman? Somebody standing near. Matthew and Luke follow suit. They use language like one of Jesus' companions. So this we don't even know who it is. It could have been anybody with the way Peter tells it. But keep in mind, Peter's a fisherman, so they're not, you know, always the best storytellers. they skew the details sometimes. So Matthew and Luke follow suit. They don't identify the swordsman. But there's somebody who does identify the swordsman, and he's the fourth one. He's John. And this is what John says. John 18:10. "Then Simon Peter," wait a second, "Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus." Now, Peter, who was there, didn't name himself. He just said, "Somebody did it." And I'm not telling. Does that sound like a guilty person? Sounds like my kids telling a story, doesn't it? Somebody did it. Like, I don't know who. But of course, too, it has to be John. We know, and like even in the resurrection account, John even has to brag that he beat, they had a race to the tomb, and he was faster than Peter. So here it is, I think, because they're fishing buddies, and I think maybe here John's zinging him again. Why did Peter leave himself out? I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know we have an answer for that. But I want to show you a portrait right now. Let's show a portrait. Can you see that? Do you know how we know that this is not a portrait of Malchus Van Gogh? The Malchus's last name was Van Gogh. And do you know how we know? Well, there are lots of reasons. It's very obvious because we know it's Vincent Van Gogh, right? But one reason is because of a detail that we have given by a doctor who wrote down the gospel. Luke, of course, was the one who was concerned about this guy who had his ear cut off. So Luke is the one who tells us in Luke 22:51, after Luke doesn't name him, but John does, Simon Peter cut the guy's ear off. Luke 22:51, it says, "And Jesus touched the man's ear and healed him." So, obviously, again, that wasn't a picture because the man didn't have a bandaged ear. He was healed. How do you think the guy, we know his name was Malchus, How do you think he felt about Jesus healing his ear? I bet he was pretty happy. What do you think? I bet he was ecstatic, very thankful to return home with an ear that night. So Jesus did this amazing miracle for Malchus. So much was going through in his life. He was facing terrible things, but he took the time to heal somebody. And that man surely was forever grateful. But I don't think Jesus did this miracle just for Malchus. Did you know that in our streets, if you take a sword and if you go up to somebody and you cut your ear off, do you know what will happen? Somebody's ear off, you know what will happen? You'll go to jail. It's a crime, right? You learned something. At least you learned something in church today, right? You cannot go and cut somebody's ear off it's a crime. You've committed a crime and you'll go to jail. It's against the law. Well, guess what? It was against the law there too. It wasn't just our laws in the United States. Peter broke a law and he did it to law enforcement. Do you think that's even worse? That usually has even stiffer penalties, doesn't it? Resisting arrest, attacking a law enforcement official. So when Jesus healed Malchus's ear, he didn't just help Malchus, he destroyed the evidence against Peter. Could you imagine that thing going to court? Right? So Peter's lawyer gets up, Malchus is on the stand. Sir, can you tell me which ear my client allegedly cut off? Can you point to it? That one right there? I mean, the one that's perfectly attached to your head that has no scars? You're saying that my client allegedly cut off his ear? Your Honor, I would like to present to you Defense Exhibit A, the only evidence we're going to need. And what's the judge going to say? Case dismissed, right? He can't be convicted now. The evidence has been destroyed, and Jesus undid the damage that Peter did. But there's more. Let's go back to Peter again and what he said in Mark, what he told Mark in Mark 14:50. After the ear-cutting incident, everyone deserted Jesus. The disciples, the 11 who were still with, and maybe if anybody else was there, they deserted him and they fled. Well, maybe Peter remembered what Jesus had spoken. He remembered promising, I'll never leave you. Even if I have to die, you can count on me. Because Peter came back and followed at a distance. He didn't go all the way back, but he did turn back a little bit and kind of show up and be a witness to what was happening. And as Jesus was at the palace of the high priest being accused by the Sanhedrin, the Jewish ruling body, who were trying to find reasons to convict him, Peter was outside in the courtyard warming his hands. And there was a servant girl who approached him and recognized him, recognized his accent. He's from the place that Jesus was from. And she asked him, hey, are you one of those who's with Jesus? And he denied it. And then she got the other crowd around. Yeah, and they said, yeah, I can hear it. You're with him, aren't you? Peter said, no, again, denial number two. And then they all came in and asked him, surely, you're lying to us. And then a third time, Peter lied. He swore. He cursed. And then he heard the rooster in the background. Can you imagine how Peter felt? Let's go to that scene. Mark 14:71-72. Peter began to call down curses, and he swore to them, I don't know this man you're talking about. Immediately, the rooster crowed the second time. Then Peter remembered the word Jesus had spoken to him. Before the rooster crows twice, you will disown me three times. And Peter broke down and wept. This was not Peter's finest moment. This first Easter was not his best. Because on our Maundy Thursday service, we sang this song, Were You There When They Crucified My Lord? Was Peter there when they crucified his Lord? The answer is no, he was not. Peter was not at the cross. Peter was probably licking his wounds and just destroyed. Peter also on early Sunday morning, when Jesus resurrected, when he came back, Peter was not there. Peter, it seems, was in hiding. Him and the other disciples, the other 10 who were still left, it seems as though they were hiding behind locked doors. These guys that Jesus had trained and been with and poured his life out into for 3 years, he'd invested in and was counting on them. That first Easter, the biggest moment of their lives, when the stakes were the highest, they were all stinking it up together behind locked doors, afraid and just wallowing probably in their cowardice, in their failures. But fortunately, in this story, not everybody stunk it up that first Easter. There were some women who came to the cross and watched Jesus die. And then they showed up very early on Sunday morning with a plan to anoint Jesus' dead body. It was Mary Magdalene, Salome, some other women, and they arrive. And instead of finding Jesus' dead body like they expected, they found someone there, an angel. And this is what it says in Mark 16, 6 through 7. This is the angel speaking to the women. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go tell his disciples and this is really significant. I mean, this makes, keep in mind, who's writing this? Who's really behind the Gospel of Mark, we think? Do you remember? Peter. "But go tell his disciples and," what's next? Anybody's reading it? "Peter." How do you think those words hit Peter when he heard it? Now, I'm guessing that Peter probably thought that he was out. Like he'd failed too much. Like he choked in the biggest moment. He had a chance to prove himself. He was a liar, a curser, a coward, everything negative. Why would Jesus want anything more to do with him? He'd already proven himself out. So I'm guessing that Peter felt this way about himself, that he'd failed too big, that there was no way. "But go tell his disciples and Peter." But Jesus used his name and he was connecting with him. It was this really strong message that even though maybe Peter had given up on himself, Jesus had not given up on Peter. In his darkest moment and his worst day, in his most embarrassing moments, Jesus had not given up on Peter. There's a story in the Gospel of John that's really personal to me, and it's Peter. And I absolutely love it. It's in John chapter 20. And the story is, and I think maybe, this is one of the theories, that maybe Peter thought that he was out and that he was going to go back to his old life of fishing. Jesus sure had showed up again and you know, affirmed him. But would Jesus really want him again? Like, surely these things were haunting him. And so Peter says to some of his fellow disciples, "Hey, let's go out and go fishing." So they spent the night fishing, and they caught nothing all night long. Then John 21:4 gives us this great detail. "Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore." Early in the morning this happened. All night long, Peter had been out and caught nothing. But early in the morning, they caught nothing. How did you wake up this morning? How did you wake up? Tired? Maybe somebody had to go to the bathroom, I don't know. A lot of us have like alarm clocks. A lot of us use our phones, you know. So that alarm or maybe the radio or a ringtone or whatever it is, it sounds, and that's just a cue to us to wake up. Do you know how Peter woke up in the morning? He didn't have alarm clocks back then. He had a rooster. Every morning, Peter woke up to the sound of cock-a-doodle-doo. What do you think Peter associated that sound with? Right? I mean, and Jesus like made it worse. Before the rooster crows twice, "You're going to disown me 3 times. So when that rooster crowed, that was the sound that Peter heard. he could picture that moment. Every time he heard it, it was a reminder of how he had failed so miserably, how he had been a coward. So every morning he's got this message, this reminder, this reflex just to feel bad when he hears that sound. But Jesus did this early in the morning. It was a night they caught nothing. Jesus told them to cast their nets out again on the other side. They caught a lot of fish. And then they realize that's Jesus. And Peter swims into the shore. And Jesus is cooking fish for breakfast. He feeds them. And then on the beach there at the Sea of Galilee, Jesus and Peter have this conversation. And three times. And it's early in the morning. So I'm just in my imagination. There's a rooster crowing in the background. That's the soundtrack. Three times Jesus says to Peter, "Hey, do you love me? Feed my sheep." And they have this. And Jesus has replaced the rooster crowing very early in the morning and that feeling of failure with Peter's greatest affirmation. Peter knew no matter what, Jesus is going to be with him now. So now the sound of the rooster was now great affirmation from Jesus. No longer condemnation and failure and misery. Jesus did so much for Peter. I say that story is very personal to me, and it's because it takes me back to my calling. My family in 1999, back before the turn of the millennium, the turn of the century, 1999, we were at the Sea of Galilee. I was 20 years old, about ready to get engaged. I bought an engagement ring over there off the Sea of Galilee. And a kid who's getting ready to start his last year of college, thinking maybe I was going to be a pastor, but feeling very unworthy. And we were at the Sea of Galilee, and I sort of had this picture, because there's a church built to where Jesus had this conversation with Peter. And I kind of pictured the boat, and I pictured Peter swimming into the shore, and I pictured Jesus cooking the fish. And in my mind, I pictured Jesus and Peter having this conversation. And I just wept. I didn't understand it. That's the only time I cried over there. That doesn't happen to me a lot. But I was just very emotional and overwhelmed. And I knew for me what it meant was that even though I didn't feel worthy to be a pastor, it was not about whether or not I was worthy. It was about the call of Christ. And that it was okay for me to go. Like I wasn't ineligible like I thought I was. That Christ was calling and that was enough. And it was so emotional. And then right before we started our first ministry, Jenny was pregnant with our oldest. We left youth ministry because we couldn't do lock-ins and have kids. We knew that. We're not wired for that. And this guy who's looking for a pastor at a church in Frankfurt, he said, "I've got this strange vision. Three times in my kitchen and three times I just sensed God saying to me, feed my sheep. I don't know what it's about. I don't know what it means. Some people say you're supposed to be the pastor. I don't think that it means that. But anyway, I'm charged with finding a pastor. Maybe it's about me trying to find the next pastor." And I thought, "You have no idea, sir, what you're saying. But that story is so personal to me, too." And that man with that calling, for 11 years, we worked together and did ministry. And he is a brother, a dear friend in Christ. He will always be important to me. His name's Paul. I love Paul dearly. And so we did this, and it was kind of our call. And we were together, and as long as we were together, and it was sort of Paul's going from Frankfurt that led to my coming here, too. Because we had this calling to be together and to make disciples. But this morning, as I was thinking and remembering, I wasn't planning on sharing this story, but I remembered Paul because it took me back to that calling. So I called Paul this morning, and his wife passed away 6 weeks ago. And so it's a very emotional Easter for him, and we talked about this memory and how important this hope is, and not how well we perform or not, because it's totally overshadowed by the resurrection of Jesus Christ and the hope that Jesus is the first fruits for us, and that we'll have life again, and we'll be able to see other people, our loved ones too. The reason why Easter of 2012 was so memorable for me is because my performance is totally forgotten because we were overshadowed by an event, the joy of the arrival of Korah, Salome. So the story of Easter isn't about Peter's worthiness, whether or not Peter was worthy. The story is about the one who is worthy, the one who forgives, the one who undid the damage that Peter had caused, the one who didn't give up on Peter even when he gave up on himself, the one who truly loves us, the one who cares, the one who keeps affirming us even in our failures, the one who keeps healing. And I just want to read something. In light of Peter and everything that he went through, I think this statement here has a lot of power. 1 Peter 5:7. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. This is a man who knew it personally. So I want to spend just a few moments, just quiet moments, and I just want to encourage us to cast our anxiety or cast our cares upon him, to just kind of speak out our hearts to the Lord, whose Spirit is here with us. We have confidence because of Easter. If you want to follow Jesus, I want to encourage you to pray this prayer with me. God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I confess with my mouth that Jesus is Lord, and I believe in my heart that you raised him from the dead. I seek you to give me the Holy Spirit to help me follow Jesus, casting all my cares on you because you care for me. Amen. We're going to close this message by listening to the story of Peter's first encounter. When you hear this story, you'll realize how Jesus was taking Peter back, that one of his last encounters on the beach. But just listen to this story, because the story is about Jesus' worthiness. Luke chapter 5, 8 and 10, 11. What had happened here is that Peter and his friends caught nothing. Sound familiar? They were fishing and they caught nothing. And Jesus told him to go back out, do hard work, go back out and cast their nets out again. And they didn't want to do it, but Peter said, well, because you say so, we will. And they did, and they had this, again, miraculous catch. And they hauled it in, and when Jesus came in, or when the boat came in and Peter came in, this is what Peter did after that first miraculous catch. Peter fell at Jesus' knees and said, go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man. Then Jesus said to Simon Peter, don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people. So they pulled their boats up on the shore, left everything, and followed him.